Do you hear me? As I said, I will start from the beginning. I thank the organizers. And the results I'm going to talk about are joint with Eli Glasman. First I would like to give some definitions that many of you know. And actually, after the talk of Lionel, I have here a harder task because I need to say things that he didn't say. So I'm dealing here with dynamical systems. This is outdoors topological group. And this is a compact Hausdorff space. And I call it minimal if the empty set and X are the only G invariant subspaces. And this is, of course, equivalent to the previous definition that we heard this afternoon, which says that each every orbit is dense. And we have in this category the universal minimal space that was defined. So I will just say that this is my notation. So in a way, because of this definition, minimal actions are the most simple, quote unquote. And there is interest in, given a group G, it's interesting to compute the universal minimal space because it, in a way, it classifies all the minimal spaces. They are G equivalent images of it. So let me now say some things about the history. So first of all, there is a Veitch theorem. Veitch theorem states that if G is locally compact but not compact, then the group acts freely on U of G, which says in a way that it's big. And actually, under the same condition, we can show that, or it can be shown that UG is non-metrizable. So it came as a surprise when it was discovered that for bigger group, i.e. non-locally compact but still Polish, you can find examples where the universal minimal space is metrizable and even one point. So I will give here some examples. So Gromov, Milman, 83. The universal minimal space of the unitary unitary isomorphisms of the separable Hilbert space with the pointwise topology is extremely amenable. Oh, I should say that When the universal minimal space is one point, it means that for any G action we have a G fixed point, and this is of course very interesting, and we call such groups extremely amenable. Pestov in 98 showed that if I take the orientation preserving homeomorphisms of the circle, the universal minimal space is the circle with a natural action. Kekris, Pestov, Todorcevic, they showed many things. But if you take the automorphisms of the random graph, this I think was stated before, Again, with pointwise topology, you get the linear order on the random graph. And Glasner-Weiss they showed that the universal minimum space of the homomorphism of the Cantor set is, so this is a new thing, it's the space of maximal chains over the Cantor set with the compact, here we take compact open topology. So let me explain what is the space maximal chain over, in this case, the Cantor set, but it can be anything, any topological space. So let us recall that given K, we have the hyperspace. The hyperspace of K is the collection of closed subsets of K, non-empty. And this has a natural topology called the Viatoris topology. Let me maybe explain it in the case when K is metric, when it's also known as the Hausdorff distance. And we say that two closed sets are have distance that is smaller than epsilon if I take an epsilon blow up around one of them, and then I need the other one to sit in that epsilon blow up, and vice versa. In that case, the distance is less or equal to epsilon. So this can be actually, there is a topology also for not for the non-metric case, which is called the Viatoris topology. And so the maximal chains, actually, they live in the hyperhyperspace. So in what is a chain? So we have some chain. So chains mean it's a chain with respect to the inclusion. So if we have, so this is a closed set of closed sets, and they are ordered by inclusion. So if A and B are in C, either A is included in B, or vice versa. And maximal means that we cannot add any more closed sets. So here is an example. If I take, for example, the sphere, and I take, here is the North Pole, and I take balls with bigger and bigger radius, so the collection of all those balls, including, of course, the point, the North Pole, up to the whole space, that's a maximal chain. Or in the case of the Cantor set, let's think about it as the middle third. Here is 0, here is 1. So I can take, for example, this chain. So it starts with 0. It grows until it covers all of the space, and this is maximal, of course. So that's two examples. So if I let me repeat the result. It's not here. So the universal minimal space of the homomorphism group of the Cantor set is the space of maximal chains over K. So now I want to state the first new theorem. So for that I need to introduce a new space. This space is called the corona. And it's the Stone-Chell compactification of the integers minus the integers. This is a very known space for people who are working in logic and set theory. which has been investigated from many points of view. It has many interesting properties. For example, it's very big. And it can be thought as non-principal ultrafilters on the integers with appropriate topology. It's of course not metrizable, it's compact, it's zero dimensional. It has no order topology, which is a very important remark, which will be maybe understood a little bit more later. And I would also like to mention that there is a result by Parovichenko from 63 that gives topological characterization of this space, given that the continuum hypostasis holds. And this characterization doesn't hold if the continuum hypothesis doesn't hold. That was shown by Van Mill and Van Duyn. And actually, this is not surprising because this is the stone space of a very natural Boolean algebra subsets of the integers where with the equivalence relation that two sets are equivalent if their symmetrical difference is finite. So the new theorem is that the universal space of the homeomorphism group of the corona is the maximal chain over the corona. So I will not say too much about the proof. I'll do a little bit of commercial to my talk on next Monday, where it's my intention to give the proof. But let me say that it's similar to the proof of the Cantor case, but of course not identical, and some new ideas. So let me, maybe I should mention that here we do use the dual Ramsey theorem, and here of course also, and here it was the technique was concentration of measure. Here Ramsey theory. Here Ramsey theory Frey-Sef structure. So it seems that these are the tools that are used. But actually, there is a new tool that was introduced by Uspensky, and let me describe that. So he defines something that he calls the representative family of G space. I will write something and then I will define what I wrote. Okay, so here on the left side we have the greatest ambit, and because I didn't need to define the universal minimal space, let me define this. So this is a pointed G space. What is a pointed G space? Or a transitive pointed G space? There is some point here, fixed point, that has a dense orbit. And it's universal with respect to such objects. So every time I have a transitive G system, I have a onto map from this space onto that space where this fixed point, or not fixed point, this specific point goes to this specific point. So in particular, there is the so-called enveloping semigroups. They sit in x alpha to the x alpha, and it's just the closure of, so this will be, so E of x will be the closure of the following map. Sort of course, in the appropriate way, and I need here to take the closure with respect to the point-wise convergence topology, and here it is a transitive system, and so I have a map onto each of them, and therefore I have a map into this product, and I call the family representative when this is an embedding. Okay. So we immediately have a simple lemma. If x alpha is representative for G, then UG, the universal minimal space, embeds into a product of minimal spaces that are subspaces of this x alpha. So for every beta, there is an alpha, so that m beta is in x alpha. And this is actually easy to see because these semigroups are inside x alpha to the x alpha. So we actually have here a huge product of many copies of each x alpha. And we know that the universal minimal space lives here. Many copies maybe, but there is of course one copy at least. And so this copy will go onto, of course, a product of minimal spaces, exactly of this form. So if we can find a representative family and also know all its minimal subspaces, then we know something very strong. We know that the minimal universal minimal space embeds into such a product, and with maybe some additional facts, we can know what is the universal minimal space. So, so here is another theorem of Chomsky. So let G be a closed group of Homeo X under the Higgs's compact Hausdorff. And then the following family is representative. So what is written here? This is the, for a given n, this is the closed space of n vectors of closed sets. So we will call this En. So all we need to know is to understand all minimal subspaces of En for each n. So maybe it sounds simple, but unfortunately, it's very complicated. Let me maybe mention that Uspensky actually proved a more general theorem. He showed that xyn is representative. Where yn is g closed g invariant of x x to the n, n has the following property. Given any finite open cover of x, so alpha is there is an n, and there is f1 to fn in yn, so that f I refined alpha. So actually we don't need the whole en. We can use this version, and this can be advantageous. Okay. So let us immediately recall now an open question. Where maybe this new technique can help us. And the open question is, what is the universal minimal space of the homomorphism group of the Hilbert? So let me recall some known results. Maybe I'll do it there. So by a theorem of Uspensky, but this is another other article. We know that Homeo Q acts or is not pre-transitive or does not admit pre-transitive action on U Homeo Q. Pre-transitive means that you take three distinct points, you take three other distinct points, and you want to find a mapping in between. So he showed that the action of Homeo Q on the universal minimal space is not like that. The natural action that it comes with, and actually he showed it for every topological group. And then we have the theorem more correct. So we know actually that in this case the action is not one transitive. So that one transitive means that I can find two points that I cannot map them one from the another. And this was proven actually by exhibiting a minimal a new minimal space that had that property, and that was M of Q. That is the space of connected maximal chain. So by the name you understand that it sits inside the space of maximal chains, but it's a chain so that every closed set in the chain is connected, and this can be shown to be a minimal space under the action of the homomorphisms of the Hilbert space, and it's not one transitive. And so what is known in this case, in addition, is that if we look on the minimal subspaces the following, so I'm looking now in minimal subspaces of X M of Q. This lives in X X X. So three. So actually, it's very simple. So simple, I need to check it in my notes. Right. So let me continue here. M is M of Q. Okay, so we have M, this is actually a singleton. We have this space MX, so MX is the collection of all connected maximal chains, so that the root, every maximal chain has the minimal element, which is one point, so that the root is X. So this is, of course, G equivariant to Q. And we have this, which is a singleton of connected chains, so this is G equivariant to M itself. And actually, this result made the Pestov conjecture that M is the universal minimal space. So how can we try to prove that? So we can try to use Uspensky's theorem. But here we come to the first problem, because actually, we don't even know to, we don't know to do the case E1. This is very hard if you will try to do it. Maybe I should mention that in topology there is a theorem by, it's called Curtis-Shorin, and it says the following. So if you see this, you might suspect that you can reduce this question. The problem is, of course, that this is not G equivariant, so this does not help at all, or at least not in an obvious way. So we don't know to do the case of XXQ. Can we do the case XXX in other cases? Well, it turns out that yes, and this is what I want to talk about now. So my goal will be to do it for the corona and the Cantor. So let me first talk a little bit about the combinatorial structures, and then I will connect it to this issue. So I define an MN pattern. This is a non-empty collection. Subsets of this. I take n symbols to the power m, I have some collection. Now I would like to define a stable MN pattern. And so in order to do that, I need first to define what is an induced pattern with respect to a partition. So I think the best way is to do it with the picture. So let's say this is 1 to n. And let's say that, so I have here a collection of subsets. And let's say that one of the subsets is this one. Now I'm given a partition of n. So it's, let's say this one. Partition of seven elements into three elements, and I want to define the induced pattern. So the induced pattern will have the same number of elements as the partition. And in this case, I see that this element touch one and two. So it goes to this element. Very simple. So this is the induced pattern. So what is a stable element pattern? So it is a pattern so that for every alpha or in mk, where k runs between m minus 1 and 2, so let's call this pattern p, and the induced pattern, we just put alpha here. P alpha depends only on k. That means that if I take two partitions into k elements, the induced patterns are the same. And let me give you an example of such a stable pattern. So it will be this one. One point, 2 points, 3 points, 4 points, like everything. Now let me connect this to the problem of finding all minimal spaces of x, x, x. No, m1. N is 1 here in my example. Oh, I didn't say that. That's a yes, actually, I should have said that n here is 1, and actually, because my result is about x, 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 I will only work with m1 patterns, but one of the theorems, which is an important theorem, works for all n, so that's why. So let me now connect this combinatorial picture to the problem in dynamics. So in order to do that, I need to introduce a family of Clopen partitions. So now I will work only in the corona, but actually this everything works also for the Cantor set. So in the corona, there is a natural family of partitions that I will think about them as orders. So how is it, how do you manufacture it? You take some subset of the integers, and so the hat of this subset is the closure in the stone check compactification or intersect with the corona. Notice that this operation is not injective, because if I start with two sets that are that their symmetrical difference is finite, I get the same. So actually, if I take all such sets, I get a basis, and that is what I'm using. And each such set is Clopen. So I will consider the family of Clopen partitions of this form. So of course, I want the fact that the union over the AI is Z. And of course, if one of the AI will be finite, then this will be empty. So I take care that I get non-empty elements. So given this, and given a minimal space, and given an element in this minimal space, I can talk about the signature. So the signature of X. So, and because I need some definitions, let me do it here. This will be the following collection. So I define it as something I haven't defined. These are going to be the patterns that I get from taking a specific Clopen partition and applying it on this element. So this is the obvious thing, but let me spell it out. For each F inside my element, it's a collection of closed sets, I take the pattern that I get from this closed set and this Clopen partition. So what can that be? So I have here a Clopen partition of my space, and I have here a closed set. So in this case, the element I will get will be this one. So here, now you see the connection between this and between the pattern. Because when I consider the space in this way, what I get are patterns. Because I forget about the fine structure of the closed set. I only care if they intersect or don't intersect the Clopen element. That's all. Okay, so now, so first of all, it's important to note that because this is a basis, if I know the signature of an element, I actually know the element. And now I will, we need a theorem. Excuse me? Oh, I used the same n as before. That was not a good idea. No, it's not fixed, and it's not the n that appeared in En. So it's n prime, and n can be, it can be any finite Clopen partition. So the theorem I need is the following. If M is minimal, G minimal, then there exists C in M so that the signature of C is stable. So I didn't define this, so let me define it. So it's not exactly what you think it is. It's not that for each clope, so what I get here is a collection of patterns, right? So you would expect me to say that I want all these patterns to be stable. So not exactly, I want it up to permutation. It doesn't work if I don't allow permutation, but this permutation is not a problem. Okay, so this means that, yes? Oh, yes. And here you don't see. So this means that if we can classify all stable patterns, which is a completely combinatorical question, and let's say that this list is manageable, and we can associate to each element in this manageable list a space, then we are done. Then we know all minimal spaces. So it turns out to be possible to do that for the case n equals 1. So let me first mention the open question. All right, write it in. Classify all stable patterns for n equals 2. So now, because it's a long list, I need I will not. The first question is, of course, for E1. Why I put here n equals 2? Because I know to do it for n equals 2.
What I'm saying, the first open case is 2. So you're asking for, you take n subsequent 2 and you write it classify all the stable.
Yes, yes. Yes, that's the first open question. Let me show you how it looks in n equals 1, and then you will decide if you want to work on it. How do I close the... Why you... How do I project it? begin presentation. Okay. Okay, only on one side, I don't know why. So what I put here, I put here first the list of all stable. But maybe before we look at this, let's look at the final classification. So here we have an exhaustive list of all minimal subspaces of E1 in the case of the corona and the Cantor set. So X is either one of those two. So it looks complicated, but actually it's okay. For example, this one. This is the singleton. This one is the maximal chain. This one is again a singleton. Again, a singleton, maximal chain, the space itself, and so on and so on. So unsurprisingly, we don't get anything else than the point, the space, or the maximal chain. So how was this list calculated? This was actually done by classifying all minimal, all stable patterns. So by M vector, I mean just 1, 2, 3 until M. So no, why? No, it's 1 exactly. Here, for example, this would be the pattern consisting only of one element, and this element is one. It's everything. Here is the example that I showed you before. Here you see some new collection. It's the collection of all subsets of cardinality less than j, and so on and so on, and it continues. And as you can see, there are more. There are 17 here, and before there were we saw only 16 spaces. And the reason is that actually what we are interested in, and I didn't say that because it just complicates the thing, is something called hereditarily stable. So that's stable plus something, and that reduces. So so we managed to do it for n equals 1, but for higher n, we don't know how to do it. So that's all. Thank you.